Blog Talk Radio.
Holy shit, this is Rebel Rousing Whispers on.
Holy shit, Tom
is on time. Blanket, Tom.
Yes, sir. I finally get on time. So much to talk about, we can't waste a minute.
No, I've wasted six already almost. Calling in late. Anyway, we might as well just start right off with the UFC fights. The big ones over the weekend, including the main event, Johnny Hendricks versus Robbie Lawler. And, of course, even though it was close, I lost. And not only between last week's episode and the fight, I upped the bet to at least 20 push-ups. So.
Okay, Tony, are you ready to count?
Are you ready to count?
Are you ready to count? Because he's going to be doing them, and you count them. At your convenience, sir.
This is why I wish we still had that live webcam like we used to.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah.
7, 8, 9.
20.
All right, good job, bud. But I tell you what, it's so close, I was about ready to join you. I mean, that was close.
Well, interesting. Looking back now, Robbie took a lot of punishment to land a lot of shots. So, caught up to him in the fifth round.
Well, see, I don't know if you've had a chance to rewatch the first round. I haven't yet, and I think that the whole thing, as I alluded to in my email to you, I think it all comes down to that first round, because the other rounds were pretty clear cut. I thought Johnny came back strong in the second, Robbie looked great in the third and fourth, and Johnny was a little more active in the fifth. So it comes down to that first round. And I think it was that close. It could have went either way, but obviously the judges seen what they seen. What I think was idiotic was the second round being scored 10-8 for Johnny. Come on. I didn't see that.
Yeah, that was weird, but it's kind of funny because 47 is my lucky number. Lawler got 347. So that was weird, but to me, the thing that impressed me the most was the fact that these guys just kind of went in there with the attitude that nobody was going to get a takedown. They were just going to beat each other in the middle of the ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I had to be impressed with the chins of both guys. Very impressed with that. So the question is, while we're on this, well, I guess we've got a couple other fights to discuss, but it's like where we go from here. But I think maybe these next couple fights we'll discuss on this card may help us answer that. So we'll keep going.
Well, you got to talk about Hendricks being injured, though. Hendricks' story is that today he was injured. He had a torn bicep going into this fight, and he hid it from the doctors. He wouldn't see the doctor before the fight. So the whole other part of the story that's interesting. Maybe, and he said that's why he really didn't go for a lot of takedowns. But I thought he won the first two rounds. Lawler won 3-4, and then Hendricks just turned it on in the last minute of the fight. That's a one.
And I guess, you could question his tactics. I mean, he won, but I think he really had Robbie rock on the feet. He was landing good shots, and then he went for a takedown and just kind of held on. I just wonder if he was tired or he kind of went back to his wrestling roots just out of pure instinct and took a chance on the judges. But it looks like he really had a chance at doing a lot of damage toward the end, but came out okay for him, so no second guessing, I guess.
Well, it just goes to show you, I mean, GSP left the division and the UFC for a reason. It's no joke being the champion in that division. It's tough to do.
Yes, yes. But I mean, talk about stack.
I was impressed with their boxing, both of them. I mean, Johnny had a very weird style of defense where he kind of put, like, two hands up in front of his together, which I've never seen before in an MMA fight. I don't know why I didn't notice if he was doing that in the George St. Pierre fight, but he had a very weird defense.
And, you know, I had to be impressed with Robbie Lawler's jabs, and I think that I've been saying this for years, that the jab is so underused in MMA, so underused. And Robbie really was, he was doing a paint job on him for a while with it. So that really worked good for him.
Hendricks had a good jab, too. He was like bouncing for a little while. Mm-hmm. He just kept on him, not because of the bicep situation, but that was incredible. A lot of strikes in that fight. Definitely lived up to main event status. And Hendricks officially has the title now, so. Mm-hmm. Then you go to the co-main event. You got Tyron Woodley and Carlos Condit. You think that's going to be a knockdown, drag-out, three-round fight. Goes to the second round, and Carlos gets taken down. He has a little bit of a wince on his face. Next thing you know, he gets kicked in one leg, and his other leg buckles.
Now, you remember what I said about that fight last week? I said it may come down to Woodley's grappling skills, his takedown, his wrestling, which, of course, as we know, takedowns are a huge part of it. And it was, I'm sorry it happened that way. And I'm sure Tyrone, if you'd ask him, would be sorry it happened that way. But it's not like he did anything wrong. I mean, he won the fight fair and square. It was a power takedown that started the trouble, and the kick finished it off. So I hope Carlos can come back soon, but it looks like he's going to be out for quite some time now.
Yep. Ice and elevation. Tough. That's a tough injury. But Woodley proved that he belongs in the division in the UFC, so we'll see where he goes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the sky's the limit on him now. I was very impressed by that. And I thought Carlos was going to be turning it on in the second round, but Woodley just took the play away. I think he won the first round and was just a great performance.
Yeah, he'll be back, I'm sure. Yeah, he definitely lived up to your nickname, Psychic Tom.
Yeah, don't get them all. You know, I'm still doing some dowsing on a map for the plane, but I'll let you guys know how that comes out.
Wayne to be called by CNN. They have Psychic Tom on the line.
There
he's in
go.
Australia. For the plane. But this was a pretty good card. I guess it would have been even better if Diego Sanchez didn't have food poisoning.
I still haven't figured out. What did he say? He ate a beef tartar or something? Was that what he said he ate? And some squid eggs?
Egg.
A what?
I think it was a rock quail. A rock quail egg.
Oh, quail. Okay, squid. I thought it was squid eggs. Okay, quail eggs. Okay.
And then he went quail hunting. Cheney.
What?
Sanchez and Miles Fury. I expected it to be a lot better fight, but Diego got kicked up pretty early and just didn't hang. He looked miserable.
Well, you know, I think that the phrase evolution is maybe overworked at times, but definitely it seemed like Diego his toolbox is just not growing now. And I mean, all the guts in the world. I mean, when he was down in the third round, you could just see he was clamping down on his mouthpiece and charging in, but it just something's just missing from the old days, and maybe it's just he has not evolved. And Miles Jury was so poised and so relaxed for such a young guy. He's definitely right in the mix for sure.
He definitely thinks he's the shit and prove it. He fought like a pretty good tough. Could be champions on the one bar did not impress me. Maybe it just seems like it took an easy route to get the win. Could have taken him out. Maybe they pushed harder at a certain point.
Well, yeah, I hear you, but maybe to play devil's advocate a bit, Rich, that Jake Shields, with the exception of that Ellenberg fight, Jake Shields has not been an easy guy to finish. And I think that Hector just was a little concerned about playing the guard game too much and overextending himself, and he did beat him. And you remember, that's only the third fight Shields has lost in 9 years.
Yeah. More power to him. We had all been the same crew. I missed this one.
By split decision. Francisco Cervino beat Rene Forte by unanimous decision. Justin Scoggins beat Will Campuzano by unanimous decision. Sean Strickland beat former interview subject of mine, Bubba McDaniel, by rear naked choke in the very first round. Bubba just can't catch a break. At less than 30 seconds left to go. I caught him. First fight of the night, Robert Whiteford beat Daniel Pineda by unanimous decision as well. That's it for that one. But we got plenty of other news, boxing and otherwise. Got some interesting ESPN fights coming up this tomorrow night. We got Bellator. We got another UFC fight coming up Sunday night from Brazil. Oh, crazy. It's a big combat sports season right now, I guess. There's no NFL. All the fights coming up. But anyway. Dana White's not too happy with Holly Holm's management. Big story. Apparently there was a deal on the table. It seemed like everything was hunky-dory. It was a workout. She's coming. Love the deal. Now Dana White's been around those MMA circles today saying the man sucks, so meeting's not good at all, according to him, and they're not interested whatsoever in Holly. But they won't confirm either if they have any deals with Gina Carano or Christian Cyborg, just, you know, in the works.
Yeah, there were all kinds of rumors, supposedly, about the money that Holly's manager was demanding, but I never seen any sources of it. There were a few different forums I was on about that. And the guy was called out and says, well, you know, a few of the guys that were saying that were called out and says, well, where did you see all this, that she was demanding some outrageous amounts of money? So, I don't know.
Well, they weren't going to give her an immediate title shot, which was what I thought she was on. Then I heard that she was willing to take, you know, a preliminary fight, but she had to have a shot at Rousey, which guaranteed he had money. But she's coming from boxing. So she's probably gotten paid quite a bit as a boxer to be in the event or, you know, something close to it, especially in the overseas markets. So the UFC likes to go overseas. That would be a perfect fight for somewhere in Europe. But, you know, she should have fought somebody in the UFC at an introductory level first. She should have been able to agree to for decent money. But she basically said it was all up to her manager.
Well, it still leaves the UFC in a quandary, though, about this whole thing now, because we're obviously not going to see the Cyborg fight anytime soon, if ever. Gina Carano has not expressed any interest in coming back, and so I, at this point, have to assume that's all just rumor and speculation. Now, Holly won't be there, so what's next? What's next for Ronda? I mean, if she's the big star, as Dana said, she's the biggest star, and I did hear some numbers on the pay-per-view. I know, Rich, that's more your department. We can get onto that in a bit, but her numbers sure didn't confirm the fact that she's the biggest star ever. So it's going to be an interesting dilemma here. And the whole thing is Dana created this Frankenstein in the first place. And now I guess he just feels that no matter what kind of slop he puts on everyone's plate, they'll buy her pay-per-views. So I guess that's the key.
The other way to look at this is Dana White being Vince McMahon, you know, just putting it out there like an asshole so that he makes his position known. It's in writing, it's in all these articles that he said this.
How naive does he think the fans are, though? That if everyone has made it clear, the overwhelming majority of fans have made it clear what they want to see, and he's saying, no, you're not going to see it, and we're going to continue these mismatches, and you're going to pay for it. That's the question, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, they can't find anybody to fight her. It's not going to look good. And if they keep throwing her to the wolves, too, you know, she's going to get out. She's just like Gina Carano. So she's kind of made that clear, too. She's on no timetable of anybody else's. She's on her own timetable. So.
Sure.
But they'll find somebody, even if it's not Holly. I think they're going to do some kind of deal with Justine.
Well, I guess we'll find out, but, I mean, it does kind of bring up the whole question of pay-per-view in the first place. I mean, you wonder why they can't get enough sponsors. I mean, we don't have the Super Bowl on pay-per-view. And I don't think the Masters golf tournament is going to be on pay-per-view. I don't think the World Series is on pay-per-view. And I don't think the NBA Finals are on pay-per-view. We've just got our sports that are. And I think until that changes, we just can't be taken that serious. This whole pay-per-view notion is just becoming obsolete now. But
why don't you tell us how you really feel?
Yeah.
But what fight are they really making? Today they just announced, I think, Frankie Edgar and BJ Penn are going to take a third strike at each other. Sunday, July 6th, as part of the Ultimate Fighter finale. The main event on Fox Sports 1. Does Hello, is this the Tornado Residence?
It is.
This is Rich, Friends and Family Program.
Yeah.
We're back on the air. I got the talk lady, talk blog talk radio lady to listen to reason and take that.
That's good. I hate that.
Hello.
Hello.
You there?
I'm here.
There he is. Oh,
how are you?
Back on the air. Tom. Tom, are you still there?
All right. We're back, Tom.
We have not lost our sight of predictors. Yeah. So, did you hear me say if you're Penn, number three? DJ Penn, Frank. Tom.
Yes, sir. We're back.
Did you hear about Frankie Edgar, DJ Penn?
Yeah, I just... I don't know if there's that much pent-up demand for a third time. I've got to ask myself what's going to be different unless Frankie, I don't know. What's your feeling on that? What do you see as the demand for it?
Well, I just basically say, well, why do you have a third fight when one guy won two?
Yeah, and I guess the question is, what's going to be different this time? Because if my memory serves me correct, I mean, I'm not saying they were complete mismatches, but I didn't have any problem with the scoring, with the decision, and I don't recall any big giant outcry that BJ was robbed, and Frankie has a very difficult style for him, so I don't see what the big deal is.
I think BJ thinks Frankie's lost his game, and he's been out of the game long enough to stay on the scales and get back.
Well, then the argument could be made, though, what has BJ done lately? I mean, with all due respect to a Hall of Famer, in the last couple of years, what is, you know, where's he been?
He's selectively trying to pick the last good fights to go off on, I think. That's all. Dana White probably wanted him to retire, so he's happy that he's going to take any fight. By the way, tonight we have a guest at 9:15, a little while here, about 45 minutes. So. Tony Schultz, we have two Tonys on the air. I don't know how we're going to deal with this. I have to say Tornado and Big Tony. Tony Schultz, but he's the guy who wrote a couple books on Amazon. Very interesting stuff about how to be a fight promoter, how to be a fight promoter. I mean, He's got some interesting perspective and a lot of experience and documentation, which is the key. A lot of people don't realize. But the hardest part is the paperwork for some of this stuff. And you got to do so much paperwork for so many different aspects of it. You got to do your PR. You've got to do your agreements with your hotels and your venues and transportation stuff. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. Blood work. You have to consider all these things for licensure, putting on a promotional event. So Tony's going to come on and talk to us a little bit about that and his books. Just got in touch with him through LinkedIn, so figure we're due for universal event promotion advice. Who knows? We could have unlimited fighting.
And I know people that have done promotion, fight promotion, and there's a lot of things that people don't think of. I mean, they just think like the big Don King and Bob Arum and Golden Boy production things. But they don't, there are so many small details. I remember talking to a young lady, Philadelphia young lady by the name of Bridgers, in her early 20s, or mid-20s, I guess now, mid to late 20s, and she really studied under Russell Peltz, Hall of Fame promoter, and she did her first card about 2.5 years ago. I was privileged enough to go to that card in Philadelphia, and I remember talking to her, and I remember reading an article on her first, and then talking to her before the fight, and she mentioned that people don't even think of was making sure that all the fighters get paid, for one. Making sure all the fighters get fights or HBO cards. But these small local cards in Philadelphia, you don't have anything to keep. And you house and to make sure that you at least break even where you can pay your fighters, you can pay your officials, you can pay your ringside position, you can pay for the use of the building. People don't realize that. Then I was at I was at a weigh-in because I had a friend of mine who was going to fight on this pro card. And here's the thing that I've never seen. A friend of mine was going to make weight, and he was 0-1 at the time, and he had gotten a really bad break in his first fight. So the promoter was a Greek guy, and he was really building up his brother who was going to make his pro debut. They were bringing in Greek belly dancers, and they were really going to make a promotion out of this fight. Well, my friend gets down there, he gets on the scale, and he's ripped to the bone, and he's looking intimidating. He's got a hat pulled down. It's nasty. He goes, I don't want to fight him. You know? He goes, I don't want to fight him. So now we're like, well, shit, we got to get this, see what we can do to get this turned around. They tried to act shit and put another guy who had like about 10 fights, it's more experienced, maybe not saying he must have had the guy was like whatever and whatever. Well, that guy, somebody failed a physical in there. So you're getting people failing physicals, you're getting people not making weight, you're not showing up. You're getting people going out there saying, I don't want to fight that guy. Yeah, local promotions, small kind of promotions, really hard. Really hard. They can be very, very stressful.
Well, one thing that stood out about Tony's book is that he wants you to get in the mindset of marketing every show as a sellout. It's interesting. Kind of makes you shoot for the stars. You guys really want to kill each other. It's a decent rivalry. You've got two fights that really don't work.
good, honest, hard fighting, working kids beat each other up, you know, and you can sell them. Why not go for it? And, every time you try to sell it out. So, I just scanned it today. Basic guy. And it's very interesting the way he looks at it. We'll have to ask him, you know, some of the questions that he set up over the years. And he got this this idea of these books and how they're doing all that. But talk about fight promotion. I sent you to both guys an article about the boxing matches on Showtime on the weekend. And I didn't agree or disagree with the tone of the article saying every fight was fixed. But looking at those videos out of context, you might think so.
I was reading the article and watching the video shortly before we went on the air tonight. I didn't get a chance to see the fights live because I was down in Florida. My hotel did not have Showtime, and they weren't showing it at the bar that I was at, which wouldn't have made a difference anyway. I wouldn't know what the hell was going on. I could have been watching chess. You could tell me it was boxing.
Okay.
Going back over those three fights, the first fight, the fight between Daniel Ponce de Leon and Juan Manuel Lopez, I really did not see anything controversial in that fight. Okay, granted, Juan Ma was the Puerto Rican fighter. He was obviously the favorite in this card, in this arena. By Ponce de Leon. He went flat down on his back. You could tell he was hurt. He was on the ropes. He was caught with another combination by Lopez. He went to clinch. He went down to his knees. Another knockdown. He was then pinned back to the ropes. And he was trying to swing back, and I can understand the argument to let him go a little bit longer. Same time. I was legitimately hurt. He took three or four more flush shots. I will not fault the referee for the side. I already knew what happened from reading negative posts. And what made it a little bit more suspicious was the fact that this guy are totally different. Looking back at it, the fight went about a minute. And there can be a couple arguments I can make on the fight not being a fix. Anybody ever hear of the term getting caught cold?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, exactly, right? I remember one of my old trainers back from Los Angeles telling me when he was an amateur years prior, you remember getting ready for a fight, and he remembers walking to the ring. Next thing he remembers sitting on the trainer's table back in the dressing room saying, "What happened, coach?" Coach said it was a left hook, first punch, got caught cold. So, I mean, is there an argument to saying that maybe Scott wasn't warmed up, maybe Scott wasn't prepared, maybe Scott was caught cold? Absolutely. I looked back at it, as the fight started, Wilder was controlling the issue with his jab. You know, he was jabbing, keeping Scott at bay. He then kind of faked a jab and threw a left hook. Now, it wasn't a Joe Frazier, you know, destructive left hook. It looked more to be a slap, but I know from using this combination, you know, throwing a jab, and faint, and just throw a hook over the top, that, yeah, sometimes a punch like that can land and catch a guy off guard. The right hand was of no consequence. The right hand, if landed, was grazing. So people were trying to make the argument saying, oh, that right hand didn't land. That wasn't the punch that caused the issue. It was the left hook that landed on the temple. The shot on the temple, as we all know, will knock the person's equilibrium off very quickly. And that's what I believe is the case here. Now, I looked at that video 2 times. I looked at Scott on the ground, kind of floundering. And sometimes it'll look like the person will be on the ground and they look like they're flopping around a little bit suspiciously. I've seen fights where a guy will be on the ground and he looks like he's out of it. So the referee says 10, then he pops up and he argues. I didn't see that here. I saw a guy whose eyes were pretty damn glassy to me, and a guy that looked like he was legitimately struggling to find his equilibrium. It's a legitimate knockout. Scott maybe was not prepared. Scott maybe was overrated. Scott maybe was not cold. But the fact is, I see that as being a legitimate victory for Wilder. And then the main event, which I did not have any opportunity to see, I didn't really get to see any highlights. I did read an article on it in our hometown paper. That the next morning, you know, when I woke up, I was seeing a bunch of Facebook statuses saying it was a robbery and from that fight. So I put a call into my dad, who I knew watched it, and he said, they're right. He goes, I gave Herrera the fight 3 rounds to 4. It was the fact that Garcia was fighting in Puerto Rico for the first time, had a little bit, you know, maybe overconfident. But he also said Herrera came with a great game plan to stick a jab, especially a hard jab to the body, to knock Garcia off balance. And they even said that he broke Garcia's nose in the 9th round. So it was a majority decision for Garcia, one that is controversial. And maybe this will lead to a rematch, and maybe it'll be a rematch in the close Philadelphia proximity that I'll get a chance to go to.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a pretty big push into Puerto Rico, like, with this main event, you know, Danny Garcia's big return to Puerto Rico. So, obviously, for it to be a majority decision, it had to be a close fight. You have to give it to the guy who's favored in that situation on the scorecards. But Mauricio Herrera did enough in most people's eyes to earn the win, no matter what the hometown clipping was supposed to be. You know, he should still got the win. It's just disappointing to see that kind of stuff. I might agree with you more than I agree with the person who wrote this article, saying it's quite possibly the most obvious guy in boxing history. Malik Scott was knocked out by a grazing slap left hook, followed by a straight right hand, which replay showed to not land.
Especially, I don't think the right hand was the issue at all. It was the left hook that did the job. And yeah, it may have been a slapping punch, but at the same time, it was a punch that did land on the equilibrium, and he didn't see coming.
It happens. You get caught.
I don't know. It's pretty interesting.
Fighting is a definite fact. How you get away with that? Without a disclaimer, at least.
This is my opinion only.
So. Thomas Adamek had a bad day at the office the other day. Tough one. Vyacheslav Glazkov polished him off.
Yeah.
He basically dominated him. And he was faster, fresher, and stronger, according to this piece. Adamek's 37 years old. Did not look good. Lost his 12-round unanimous decision. that puts the winner there, Glasgow, at number two spot for the IBF heavyweight rankings. He won by 117-110, 117-111, and 116-112 scores.
Wow, that doesn't even sound controversial. Wow.
Basically, it says Glasgow used jarring jabs, hard right hands, and powerful counter left hooks that busted up Adam X's right eye in the second round. And for the rest of the fight, Adam X had a pretty tough time defending himself and bled from his nose and his nose. And his company did the best he could, but could not really patch him up too good. So he lost the fight. He said he was better, Adam X said. And I lost my chance for a title shot. He says, I don't know right now about retirement. I wouldn't fault him for losing to a guy who's undefeated like that. Taking that fight in the first place was a big risk. So more power to him for that. I'm sure he's going to keep going. Yeah, it's always tough when you get cut up. You can't see. So we definitely saw recently in the one of the biggest Bellator fights I've seen in a long time. I'll just talk about that one with Pat Kern and Daniel Strode. What a comeback. Strauss was tuning up Kern the whole time. Kern had a pretty big swell up by. I don't know if you saw that time, but that was a barn burner. And all of a sudden, 30 seconds left pretty much in the fifth round. Kern sneaks in a rear naked choke.
Yeah, that's kind of like that old Yogi Berra saying, it ain't over till it's over. I think Kern fought beautiful in the first round, and then Strauss started doing his thing, just picking him up, being dominant, throwing him around, controlling the clinch. But Kern was he fought a very smart fight, great escapes, and came out in the fifth round, and it was do or die, and he did it.
I never see a fight end with the guy who lost having a bigger grin on his face than the guy who won. Notice that?
Yeah.
Once he got caught in that rear naked choke, he stood up. He was so happy for the other guy, he couldn't even be miserable for himself. You know, because he knew he was winning that whole fight. And
yeah.
To know it came down to that. That situation, give it all up, and that's the trilogy of fight. Jeez, you know, you have to give it to the other guy, I guess. But that's the first time I've seen something that happy to lose. That's pretty intense.
It was kind of funny how Strauss gave a thumbs up there, like nothing was wrong. And Kern just had to keep cranking because he knew if he'd lose that, the fight's lost. I mean, I had a 3-1 on my card, and I don't know, I didn't see the official scoring, but I just didn't see how Kern could have snuck out a decision. So, more power to him.
And if you notice, too, in the replays, what caused the injury to the eye there was more of a ridge hand, side of the wrist, than the punch. That's what really caused that cut and the most of the swelling on his eye. So I think that's where the future of MMA is. You know, don't try to land on the knuckles. You gotta go with the elbows and bones.
Mm-hmm.
The real 2x4 points of the body where getting hit really hurts, cuts you up. So I think that was good that Strauss was able to do that, but he couldn't keep the rhythm going long enough to really overwhelm Kern. And that's, you know, that's what happens when two guys fight each other that many rounds. They know each other so well. But I would guess that the fifth round would have gone unbelievable. But I don't know if I have the I have an upcoming Bellator card in front of me, but I don't have the rest of that card.
result. Yeah. But even a former guest of ours in the news should be fighting Brian Rose, June 14th, Sky Sports. Rose is a 29-year-old from the UK area. And he's actually set to appear on the undercard of Ruslan Provodnikov's latest WBO light welterweight defense. Rose's title opportunity represents a rise to the top after he got the Lonsdale belt in 2012. And then he got a final round stoppage of Joaquim Alcine in 2013 to claim the WBO Intercontinental title. And pretty excited for this opportunity, and he's going to get his shot. So we'll have to check that out. And speaking of Demetrius Andrade, one of his former opponents is fighting this weekend, Maine Smarlosian. I know I got a bunch of cards highlighted here on BoxRec. I'm going to get to. We got a Philadelphia card too there, out in Chester, wherever that is.
This is in the suburbs of the southwestern suburbs of Philadelphia. They have the Harris Casino down there.
Well, yeah, they've got a couple fights there Friday night. Same night as and it's your boy Joey I. You tried to hook him up with a radio show interview, and he never got back. Fell through somehow. But anyway, main event is a featherweight 10-rounder between Eric Hunter and NFL Vicente. That's for the vacant USBA featherweight title. Hunter 17-3, 9 knockouts. NFL Vicente is 25-2-2 with 17 knockouts. The co-main event, Victor Vasquez, 8-round lightweight fight. He's 16-8-1, and he's fighting Austin Charles 9-8-1. We also have another Tony here on this card, 6-round cruiserweight fight. Anthony Ferrante, 12-5, fighting my boy pitcher Pedro Martinez.
I didn't know several of the names you mentioned. Victor Vasquez, very tough Puerto Rican fighter. Tom and I had the opportunity to see him last year in a losing effort at the Valley Forge Casino. Victor, tough kid, full hearts and skills, to be totally honest. And the last time we saw him, it was to the point where I even said after the fight, he maybe should think of retiring. That was lost to another local Philadelphia fighter. I always call him the wannabe Adrian Broner sometimes, and of course I'm forgetting his name. But Tom, you remember that? It was the fighter that got stopped in the with the last round with like 30 seconds to go.
Right. A guy just had all the heart in the world, but he was just a day late and a dollar short.
He had words years ago with a good friend of mine, Simon Carr. Then they actually fought in the ring, and it was a fight that a lot of people thought Simon won, did not get the decision. Tony went on to fight a former protege of mine, Chuck Masaccio. Chuck beat him pretty handily, and now he has since come back from that. I know he had a big knockout win. It was like an 8th or 10th round stoppage win. But if I'm not mistaken, I think the fight got declared a no contest. I forget if it was a failed drug test after the fight. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. Let me research it right now. And then Pedro Martinez, I've covered both of these fighters in some local Philadelphia cards.
How many strikeouts did he get? When you saw him,
what did he get?
Wait, did you get
he's my daddy.
Is Don Zimmer working his corner?
Oh, my God, remember that?
No, that's such a funny name to be a boxer.
Yeah, I know.
I would have a nickname in there somewhere, so somebody always called you by the full name. You don't get confused. Kind of like Michael Jordan. Uh-oh.
I was about to say that. You know about Michael Jordan? When he had that fight at Lock Haven against me, I was there with Dr. Cox's one son, Danny, who was a ring announcer, and he was going over with me, with my major and everything, because obviously they were going to do that. They announced all the Lock Haven fighters and gave some of you, your particulars, your grade, your major, any accomplishments that you've had, things like that. So he's like, okay. And he looked at it and he goes, Mike? He goes, bullshit. We're announcing him as Michael tonight.
Well, another two cards I want to mention, boxing wise. We got a New York Gleason's Gym flavor to the next thing I want to mention. Actually, it's a pretty good complex on this Aviator Sports Complex. And we've always got stuff about Gleason's Gym on the blog on the other side of the publish stuff. And the main event here is Heather Hardy, one of their outstanding boxers. She's a super bantamweight. She's 8-0. Her knockouts by the Nivea Feliciano, 7-4-3. No big title involved, but this is a developed card, so it's pretty female fight to the top, 8-rounder. The co-main event there is Lamar Russ, who's 14-1 with 7 knockouts. And Julia Hirsch, who's 15-6-2 with 6 knockouts. And then we've got light heavyweight Joe Smith Jr., 14-1 with 11 knockouts, fighting a new kid who's 8-8, who draws 5 knockouts. Then we've got another junior, super featherweight Joel Diaz Jr., 14-0 with 12 knockouts. He is fighting a guy who's been around the block a little bit. Jose Anza, 36-29-2, with 28 of his 36 wins coming by way of knockout. So, wow, 6-rounder there. That's a wild one. A bunch of other fights there, just kind of preliminary value. Then I said, Glenn Farosian, former. I took his first loss there to our former guest, Juice. He's going to be on ESPN2, main event. He's 33-1-1 with 21 knockouts. He's fighting Mario Alberto Lozano, who's 28-4 with 22 knockouts. And he's for a title here. The vacant WBO Intercontinental light middleweight title. Say that 10 times fast. Anthony Peterson on the card, too. 32-1 lightweight. He's fighting Marcus Leonardo Jimenez, who's 13 knockouts. And I don't know if you heard of Baines having a relative in the fight game, Tony. You know about Thatch Monterosian? Thatch? You never heard of Thatch? Thatch? They gotta be fucking related. Well, this is a 4-round welterweight fight. All of a sudden, Thatch Monterosian comes out of nowhere. He's fighting big man Gustavo Lopez, who's 0-1-1 on the undercard of the Vance Monterosian. But it's gotta be related. Thatch and Baines, man, that's a weird combination to grow up as brothers. Yeah. But Big Phil is a little brother or a cousin. So that's funny. So that's from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa in Tabazon, California. Be on the ESPN's tomorrow night only. One night. It's a pretty interesting card there.
by the way, I did not check if Francois Botha won any time about the I know he's officially not retiring. We already got another fight lined up for him. We got it on our blog. And it's going to be, in April, in Abu Dhabi. United Arab Emirates there on Yaz Island. It's going to be a Yaz man. Anyway, what else we got? We got fights all over the world on this weekend. We got the vacant IBF female welterweight title on the line over in freaking Belgium. 10-rounder between Sabrina Giuliani, in relation to the mayor, I think it's 12-1. One knockout, fighting Ivana, 12-1, 5 knockouts. That's the fight. Okay. Big time fight. Kind of a tough cruiserweight matchup here in Germany. He's a worst fight of the week against, I guess. In Germany. Paez Jr., who's 37-4 with one draw, 22 knockout wins. Fighting Vivian Harris, who's 31-9-2 with 19 knockouts. Known by the nickname of Vicious, last time I heard. Then we have a light welterweight fight between Abner Lopez, who's 17-3 with 15 knockouts, and Ricardo Dominguez, who's 37-10-2 with 22 knockouts. And a whole slew of other good fights on the card, too. Right down the little guys. That's a pretty interesting fight from Mexico, no TV. Mexico Azteca? Who gets that channel? Those people better tape it. That's all I'm saying. Also in Mexico, Saturday, we have a light welterweight fight between Humberto Soto and Juan Carlos Abreu for no title. Soto is 62-8 with 35 knockouts, 2 draws. Abreu is 16-0 with 1 draw and 15 knockouts. Fights south of the border this weekend. And we go to Panama, City Panama. As if there wasn't enough foreign fights, we're going to miss. We got a bantamweight fight between Anselmo Moreno and Javier Nicolas Chacon. That's for the WBA Super World Bantamweight title. Moreno is 34-2-1, 12 knockouts. Chacon is 19-1 with 4 knockouts. Then we have the WBC Latino minimum weight title on the line between Leroy Estrada, 11-1 with 5 knockouts, and Edwin Diaz, who's 16-18. Nothing else really jumps out at you on that card. We got page 3. We've got to go to page 3 for the next one. We've got to go to Istanbul, Turkey, I'm Tony. We're going to miss
Wow.
That's your number one. See you get there. Istanbul, Turkey on Saturday. We have a main event heavyweights. Two heavyweight fights on the main events here. Top one is Oatlander Solis, 20 wins, 1 loss, 13 knockouts, fighting Tony Thompson, not the Tornado, 38-4, with 26 knockouts for the big WBC International Heavyweight title. International. It's an international weekend for boxing. Also, heavyweight Caballero, 9-0 with 7 knockouts, and his buddy Gabenga Olokun, who's 18-9 with 11 knockouts. That's for the vacant WBC Mediterranean heavyweight title. They're the Mediterranean title. So, the rest of the guys in this card, you've got to be born in Hungary to pronounce your name. We had a pretty interesting fight over in the UK, a couple of them, from Sheffield, Yorkshire. We got super bantamweight Kid Galahad, 15-0 with 8 knockouts, fighting Sergio Prado, who's 9-3-1, 3 knockouts. And Damian McIntosh, 14-5 with 7 knockouts, fighting Travis Dickinson. 15-1. The Kid Galahad fight for the vacant BBU super bantamweight title, and the McIntosh fight for the vacant BBBFC English light heavyweight title. Blah. Let's see what else we got. Yet. Main event female fight in the United States, another one here. Saturday, Hipstar Banquet, Long Island City, Queens, New York. Heavyweight fight, Sonia Lomonakis is 8-1-2 with 1 knockout. She's fighting Tiffany Woodard. She's 4-7-3 with a vacant USA New York State female heavyweight title. And they I interviewed way back when Facebook page is the co-main event. Tommy Reno, he's 20-5 with 4 knockouts, fighting Jason Davis, who's 12-9, 1 draw. Reno has been fighting for a while, and it's probably taken a couple, so I haven't seen him. Out there in Maplewood, Minnesota, we have an interesting fight, welterweight main event between Frederick Lawson, who's a 21-0 record, 19 knockouts at welterweight. He's fighting Mohamed Kayongo, who's 17-3 with 1 draw and 12 knockouts on Saturday. So they have a few good USA fights. I don't really keep up. That's pretty much it. So you want to go to Japan. That's it. So the big ones in boxing, of course, we have 13 coming up tomorrow night. Some pretty big fights on that one. We've got UFC Fight Night 39, which could be Dan Henderson's last fight. He's talked about retiring. 29-11, 22-8. He's fighting in the main event. It's a tough fight to call. I mean, both of these guys have some unique experience. con experience in five. So this is a tough one to call. Depends on which game this shows up. No, it's not the TRT thing.
We'll see if it can live up to the original fight, because very seldom after a barn burner like that first one they had, very seldom does the sequel come anywhere near that. So we'll see if this one will be different. But my gut feeling is it won't be, because I think both of them are very different fighters than they were just a few years ago.
One of the co-main events, C.B. Galloway, 13-5, fighting Cesar Ferreira, 7-2. Norman Park, 19-2, fighting Leonardo Santos, 12-3. Fabio Maldonado, 26, fighting Ian Vellante, 11-4. How about a name? Michelle Richard Cunha dos Prazeres, 17-1, fighting Merbeck Tysonov, 21-4. Then we have Steven Seiler, 23-11, fighting Rody Mariano de Vera, who's 13-4. Diego Brandao, 18-9, fighting Will Chope. Ronnie Marks, 14-2, fighting Thiago, 2. We've got Scott York, fighting Jussier de Silva, 15-3, 12-3, fighting Thiago de Araújo, 9-1. Castro, 9-3, fighting Noad, 7-1. First fight of the night will be Francimar Barroso, 16-3, fighting Hans Stringer, who's 21-5-3. So that's a lot of good fights. We'll have to check the schedule on that one. Everybody, reminder here, daylight savings time, check. It's in Brazil, so it's going to be on a weird time. It's going to be at like 1 a.m., right? I don't know. What's the difference? Is there a big time difference?
I think there is. Oh, I've never been to Brazil.
Brazil. As for Bellator tomorrow night, that's going to be in Kansas, so no worries there. Main event, Attila Vey versus Emmanuel Newton. And I really like Newton's style. It's kind of like Duncan Master. A lot of spin kicks and spinning elbows and back fists. He likes to spin around a lot. He likes to make himself dizzy. So he doesn't have to think about his punches. Just throws them. He should change his name to the Tornado now that I think about it. Emmanuel Newton. He's 22-7-1, fighting Attila Vey, who's 29-4-2. This is an interesting matchup, and I like Newton. I'm waiting for that guy from the sketch show, Key and Peele, to do a parody of Newton, because he looks just like him, one of the guys. So that would kind of be funny, but I think maybe he's afraid Emmanuel Newton would beat him up. Anyway, co-main event in that one is David Rickles. He's 15-2, fighting Patrick E. Freire, who's 11-5. We got Marcin Held on the card, 16-3, fighting Rodrigo Cavalheiro Correa, who's 14-2. Tim Welch is 10-4, fighting Derek Campos, 13-3. Brandon Gertz, 10-3, fighting Derek Anderson, who's 10-0. Marcio Navarro, who's 9-10, fighting Bobby Cooper, who's 8-3. Donnie Bell, 8-2, fighting Eric Wisely, who's 21-8. Torian Baguette, who's 10-7, is fighting Elsie Davis, 20-6. He goes back a ways in the MMA industry. Ryan Rogers, 10-6, fighting Barry Tapuosoa, 8-2. And we got Maurice Jackson, 2-1, fighting Daniel Gallimore, who's 2-2. Israel Giron, 17-3, fighting Cody Carrillo. All right. Now, we're overdue to connect with our fight promoter expert here. Tony Schultz. We have two Tonys on the line. From here on out, we've got the Tornado and Tony. Two different entities now. It's weird.
Well, if you need to address me, just call him Tony, call me Tornado.
Tony, this is Tony. Can I ask you a question, Tony? My name is Tony.
Hello.
Hello, Tony.
Yes.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. This is Grapple Rouse and Rich Bergeron. We also have Tony the Tornado on the line, another resident Tony. Then we have Psychic Tom Padgett, who's our MMA guy.
Good evening,
okay.
Tony.
Good evening. How are you?
Great.
Good.
Give us a little rundown. How's it going to go?
Can you hear me? All right. What was the question again?
How did you first get involved in the fight game?
Years old. Just working heavy bag. Grew up in the Midwest where boxing is part of the lifestyle. There's Friday Night Lights, so there's football and there's baseball in the summer, and then there's boxing the rest of the year. So started there, and just had never stopped.
All right. And promoting the fight game.
You said how did I get involved with the promoting?
Yeah, how did you step up from fighting to putting on an event?
I was in California for a while, and I started working out of Wild Card Gym. He had Mac and Justin running the gym, and just started watching, from the boxing perspective. And I realized that the more and more boxers I would work with, the more and more boxers I would spar with, the thing that kept coming up was you had all these amazing boxers, that would spend all day sparring, but we rarely ever get called out of the gym to go to a fight. And when you did get called out of the gym, a lot of the times it was the last minute, day or two before the fight, somebody else didn't make weight, and so they would call you in. If you made weight, great. They put you on the card basically just to fill their minimum number of rounds. And then the promoter would hand you some tickets and ask you to basically sell them to your family and friends, try to help them stop their fight, in essence. And it was just a discussion I've had over and over again with everybody from Freddie Roach to Bruce Silverglade, who's the owner of Gleason's Gym. And over and over, we've just talked about the fact that there's so few promoters who actually promote fights anymore. A lot of promoters actually just put on a fight, bring in the fighters with local followings, hope to sell out 500,000, 1,500 tickets, and they call it a day. And the fighter kind of gets left holding the bag. Their job is to not only get in the gym and train and make a living, but also get out there and, sell tickets. And, everything's kind of on the fighter at this point. So I decided to try to understand what it took to promote a fight. What were the requirements? What was the magic that turned, just a regular fight into an event, really? I mean, what got people out, what got them participating, and what built it up? And so that kind of started my my journey to this point. And honestly, I was looking for a book like I wrote, the Official Fight Promoter Playbook, years ago, and I just could never find one. So that's where all this started. It was just in the gym trying to get a fight, learning that that fight promoters weren't really promoting fight, and just trying to reinvigorate some of that magic that used to be. When fights would have been the centerpiece of Sports Center's top 10 highlights, for example.
Tony, this is the other Tony. I was talking on the air before we got you on tonight I had a chance. I just got back from vacation a few days ago, so I just had a chance to download the attacks that Rich sent to me and just look at it briefly. And I go to a lot of local Philadelphia cards. I'm a Philadelphia guy. I know a lot of the fighters. I know a lot of the promoters. And I remember a young girl just a couple years ago, mid-20s, and I was telling the guys, was doing her first promotion. She's put her first card on. She was she had learned under Hall of Fame promoter Russell Peltz out of Philadelphia. And I remember one of the keys that she said important thing was to make sure that everybody got paid. That was her biggest goal. I've seen other cards. I've been to some weigh-ins. I was telling the guys, I remember being at a weigh-in about 15 years ago, and it was the promoter doing the fight was a guy. He was a gentleman from Greece, and his brother making his pro debut was going to be the big attraction of the show, bringing in Greek belly dancers to escort him to the ring. And he was going to fight a friend of mine that I was helping train for that fight. We were sparring together. And this guy was in great shape. He was 0-1, but it was a dubious loss to a highly qualified opponent. And he came in great shape, and he just looked nasty. He got on the scale, cut to the bone. He was nasty looking. And this Greek guy, I was like, I don't want to fight him. And now it's like, well, now they're trying to mix and match everything. Because, right, when you have these local cards, you don't have, like, a jurisdiction like HBO or Showtime or pay-per-view or ESPN dictating what's going on. It's just a promotional deal. So the promoter's like, all right, now my brother doesn't want to fight this guy, so we'll put him in with this guy, who's like 0-12, to get him that easy win, and we'll put your guy pointing to us in with this guy who was like 10-1. We're like, well, our guys only have one pro fight. How's that fair? And basically they bumped our guy off the card, and, you know, whatever guy was going to fight the Greek opponent failed his physical. So you've got situations now where you have guys failing physicals, guys not making weight. I've seen it where guys don't even show up. And when you don't have that big, backer with our Showtime or ESPN, it really falls a lot on the promoter to keep these things glued. I've gone to some fights where there was 9 fights on the card. When you got there, it was 4 fights on the card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that happens probably more often than it doesn't, actually. What you have to understand, there are a lot of these promoters are just pulling guys out of the gym with just a few days' worth of notice. These guys are staying at weight, hoping to get called up. I mean, there's not a lot of guarantees, especially when you're fighting out of civic halls or fighting out of, you know, backroom gyms, things of that nature. But from the fighter's perspective, what they're thinking of is, okay, you know, I'll get $300 and, you know, basically a sparring partner in a lot of these cases. But they're not coming at it from the perspective of, hey, this promoter, if I show off and do a really good job for them, they're going to promote me, and they're going to take and put on another event, and eventually I can work up to maybe the co-main event or eventually the main event. You know, I'll go from 4 rounds, 6 rounds, 8 rounds, 10 rounds, and maybe Showtime, maybe HBO, maybe ESPN Friday Night Fights will take a look at me. The purpose of my book is people who want to get into fight promotions. To give them a guidebook, not only of the paperwork involved. I mean, there's contracts, there's checklists, there's things that you have to work out with the athletic commission. But more than that, it's about selling the actual fight to the public, because that's what fight promoters need. That's what the fighters themselves need. That's what the game needs. They need the public to take a notice of it, and hopefully get more reviews, get, you know, some highlights on SportsCenter, things of that nature. You know what I mean?
So the fighter themselves, the personality behind them, their history, the story, is why places are invented. You know, you get this story out there. So many people, they don't want to tune in unless they're invested in it. And somebody's got to have a story for them to be invested in.
Rich, what was that story you told a couple years ago, and I know you mentioned it a couple times on the air? Was that Rachel Saunders who was saying that basically he was so beat going into the fight because all he spent the whole week was drowned trying to
he spent the whole day trying to sell his tickets to his own fight, be his own manager and promoter, and do everything on his own. And he ended up going into the fight with a sore leg from hitting the gas in the brake all day in traffic, going around meeting people and talking to people and trying to do his own thing the night before the fight. I think that fight was on ESPN. And he's had a lot of those type of fights where he just gets matched up perfectly with somebody and they go toe-to-toe for the distance. And more times than not, it's a hometown tripping situation, they give it to the other guy. And he's just had that life where it's always been tough for him. And he finally got some good management. I think he's still fighting today, though. And he told me about his bringing his little kid to the gym. And this is a guy who came from a real dark background, a lot of bad stuff, spent some time in prison, was a gang member, admittedly, and just put that life behind him, got on the straight and narrow, became a fighter, and fought all the tough fights and got none of the credit.
Yeah.
Tough life. One day he said, you know, I never like to give excuses, but I was driving that whole day and had a bad leg and still managed to win that fight. I think he won that fight. With a bad leg.
Yeah,
those are the stories to hear about. And, you know, you like to hear about promoters taking care of fighters like that and, you know, making sure that young fighters and old fighters alike are treated the same and given the respect that they're due. And, you know, like the situation with Magomed Abdusalamov in New York. I mean, a big mecca of fights. And you have a situation like that where the system falls apart and it fails again like that. It's just horrible if you hear stuff like that. And actually, one of the things that shines through in that story is the promoter stepped forward and has been putting all the bills and taking care of this guy, the promoter. And I rarely hear about that. So,
yeah.
Same part of it.
Yeah, the fight game in and of itself is really a Shakespearean tragedy for the most part. I mean, you know, if you go through the history from Jack Johnson up through, you know, I mean, even if you stop at Tyson, not going beyond that. The fact is that this game is one where, you know, if you hit it big, if you hit your stride, you can make a lot of money very quickly. Floyd Mayweather Jr. has proved that with his recent deal with the CBS Showtime. But for every great fighter like that, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of equally competent, not saying that they're at the same talent level. I mean, the rounds that Mayweather and Tyson have put in is pretty unique compared to most fighters. But, yeah, there are fighters, like you said, who have these dark backgrounds, who have incredible stories that can be told and ways to promote them to the public, that people would love to come out, watch them, support them, get behind them. But we just don't have a promoter atmosphere right now. Even the promoters, that, you know, the big name promoters, the Bellas, the Golden Boys, the Top Ranks, I mean, you know, they have a few big-name fighters, but everybody else, they're not out there pushing them. They're not promoting them. They're not, you know, selling the fight. They're kind of just signing the contract with HBO, Showtime, or ESPN. They're collecting the TV check. And, you know, they're letting the TV network just, you know, run the show, and, you know, they're off to the next one.
I think actually the one guy who's really working at it seems to be Mike Tyson. He kind of bought out another promotion to do it, but you know, you hear a lot about him working closely with the ESPN, getting a lot of these guys for all the right reasons and people respecting him and working with his organization. You've got these other guys out there, like look at Golden Boy. I mean, Golden Boy is doing all this business, and their father, their founder, is struggling with drug abuse. It's obviously gotten to his head, the whole thing, making all this money. So he's the one that started this whole trend of fighters getting involved in drugs. So that's kind of disappointing. And then you have controlling Manny Pacquiao, and supposedly that's the only reason why Pacquiao could never fight Mayweather. And you've got Mayweather telling you, I mean, he thinks he can do whatever the heck he wants. So, I mean, it's just a bad environment for fighters. Because even 50 feet, I mean, he's doing it all for the name and just getting out there and standing. He's a boxing promoter. He seemed to be in for the right reasons. And you just got all these people throwing their hats in the ring like it's a gimmick. And just not respecting the sport of boxing anymore as much as they used to, I don't think.
True. I agree. I mean, there is no commission. It's not like the NFL. It's not like the NBA. It's not like the NHL. There's no specific commission that kind of sets the rules or regulations. So everybody can kind of come in, do what they want, or not, for that matter. And you're right. There is no unification in boxing. So everybody can kind of throw their hat in and say, hey, you know, we're going to do it this way. Which doesn't necessarily help the promotions at all. There's no uniform anything, really. I mean, we've kind of made Cinco de Mayo the unofficial fight blockbuster since, 2007, I guess. That's when the blockbuster fight happens, kind of like Hollywood's blockbuster movie season. But other than that, there really isn't a special, I don't want to call it a season, but there's no, you know, there's no time of year when you can get really excited about 3 or 4 or 5 boxing matches coming up that I can think of. If you guys can, let me know.
Well, you know, with boxing for me, I don't really go for, you know, the records or whatever. What I see for commercials on TV, when I watch a boxing match, it's between two people usually who were never supposed to fight each other. All of a sudden, they made the fight. To me, like, I can almost predict every boxing match that comes out these days because the promoters have set it up so they're building their guy's record, building it. So, like, this last weekend, Danny Garcia goes back to Puerto Rico and fights Mauricio Herrera there, and it's a real good match. And that's the problem I think a lot of people have is when they go back to boxing for a fight like that, and then something happens to make them go, well, boxing sucks, you know? Like, a lot of people disagree with that decision. And that's, you know, obviously a situation where it's obvious that it's not his hometown, per se, but, you know, he's supposed to win there. You know, that's how the script goes. So I think I think the biggest problem boxing has right now, getting people back who feel like they've been cheated in a lot of these situations. It happens way more than MMA. And boxing is so more political, so much more people involved. But there's too many big hits to organize. Like you said, it's a mission. And the worst part is there's no way to reverse a bad call, a bad decision, a screwdriver.
Right.
It happens way too much where guys, their whole career revolves around one fight and they end up losing because some judge made it for a sit. Wasn't even watching the fight. Anyway, tell us about some of your past events and some of the issues that you've dealt with over the years and what you think needs to be fixed.
For myself?
Yeah. From your own perspective.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I have judges who are friends. I have officials who are friends. Can't say that anything's ever been fixed. And from what particularly judge it based on the entire round, you know, how the boxer was moving, you know, what great angles, what the boxer's brawling, what you know, things of that nature. I have other judges who say, you know, if it looks even to me, you know, same amount of punches thrown, even if, you know, one boxer's throwing more punches than another, you know, who flurries at the end? Who spends the last 30 seconds really trying to impress me? Who really wants to win that round? You know, if they take the first minute 30, 2 minutes, 2:30 off, that last 30 minutes really impresses me. I hate to say anybody's fixing anything. I think we just deal with various perspectives from various judges. And same with the officials. I've actually, a friend of mine is one of the WBC official. And his main concern is basically keeping the fighters as honest as possible while also letting them work. And then, you know, he was just talking about the Tony Weeks decision a couple weeks ago with that fight. You know, the controversy that came up with Tony Weeks, you know, stopping the fight. So I think you've got so many different opinions going. You've got the boxing pundits. You've got the boxing media, which are, you know, extremely intelligent, understand boxing, understand the science of it. They know what they're looking for as far as, you know, technicality. They know what they're looking for as far as matchups. But then you have the judges who are more looking for, you know, how much work are you showing me? You know, how much do you want to win it? You know, are you going straight forward? Are you boxing? Are you brawling? Have you worked for this? Are you just, you know, are you taking as much time off as possible? And you might have two judges right next to each other who look at exactly the opposite. One person might want a boxer to work straight through all 3 minutes. Another one might want him to kind of toy around and then work the last 30 seconds. And that's...
I've looked at fights a lot of times and thought it came down to whoever's going to be the last guy to throw this is going to win it or land the punch even if the fight seemed that close. But actually, there's been studies done that show the human mind remembers only like the first and the very first and the very last part of any period of watching something or studying something. You're always going to remember
okay. In
the last part. So that makes sense that judges would look at that a lot and say, oh, I'm going to give it to the guy who wins the last part of the round. But that's the toughest time to win sometimes. You're exhausted. So it kind of makes sense. But then, you know, it kind of makes you miss the rest of it. And let you into that kind of a phase of letting the guy steal the rounds. And some guys fight that way, knowing that. I've heard of announcers talking about this guy's stealing the rounds, you know, fighting hard at the last 30 seconds.
Some boxers train. That's the only way they train.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even look at De La Hoya and, what's his name? I forget it now. You know, De La Hoya was winning for 9 rounds, and then the last 3 rounds he took off. His trainer told him to stop fighting, and he lost it.
De La Hoya versus Felix Trinidad.
Trinidad, thank you, Tito.
Yeah.
I mean, perfect example.
And what drove me nuts about that fight, and it still does, it was about some of the terrible judging. Yeah, De La Hoya took off the last 3 rounds, figuring he got one. Now, I think he got stung in about the 8th round, I think it was a punch after the bell, which caught him in the throat. And I think that scared him a little bit, because he was like, oh, shit, this guy still got some punching power. I'm ahead, let me just stay away. And the mistake was he did not punch at all. But the fact that I think one of the judges somehow gave Trinidad 3 of the first 4 rounds, if I'm not mistaken. I gave De La Hoya the first 8 rounds and a clean sweep easily, and maybe 9, 8 or 9, I don't remember. But especially those first 4 rounds, I mean, he was tattooing Trinidad.
All right, we got both Tonys.
I'm back.
All right, sorry about that. Skype crap sent me there for a second.
No problem at all.
And a little bit of a history of how you've worked over the years. Name.
A little bit.
Can you give us a kind of a talent list of who you've worked with over the years and any stories that pop out about some of the big fights put together?
Oh, sure. I worked over at Gleason's, Bruce Silverglade and his team. Worked with Paul Maginale a little bit. Some of those guys. Freddie and his brother Bobby and Mac and Justin running the gym. Worked with Pacquiao, his brother Bobby. We got Pacquiao ready for his fight in Vegas. Worked with Bobby a little bit. He was fighting just east of Vegas in a fight on like a Friday night before Manny's Saturday night fight. Worked with Peter Manfredo Jr. a bit and his father after the contender. He was working on a wild card for a while. And you know, so those are some of the bigger names, and then worked with a lot of the younger guys who were coming in and out of the gym, just kind of looking for a fight here and there. I think there was one guy named Shane. He used to actually sleep on the canvas of Freddie's gym. So at Wild Card, before Pacquiao got real big, I was over there when Freddie had the gym on the left side. Wild Card was basically in this shopping complex. So it's in the shopping complex. And there's, a laundromat and a few other things there. Well, there's one set of stairs on the one side that go up to the gym. There's another set of stairs on the other side that go up to where what used to be Freddie's apartment. So he used to literally live on the one side, walk downstairs, go up and open the gym on the other. So I would look over there, try to get in on the mornings. It was harder when Pacquiao was in town, just because, you know, the parking lot would get filled up pretty quick. And then when I was there, James Toney was still fighting. That was before his fight with Peter over at the Staples Center. So we had Pacquiao, we had Manny in, we had James Toney, and we had Tito Manfredo, and they kind of split Tito Manfredo Jr. in the back with his dad to work with Justin to do a lot of core and trying to get his stamina up. That was as he was working up to his fight with Cal Zaghi, afraid that he wasn't going to have enough stamina to hang with Cal Zaghi. So they were really working on that, core punches, things of that nature. So that's kind of my history as far as working with fighters. I've been around Bob Arum. I've been around a couple of his promotions. Gone to several Lou DiBella productions. I think Lou DiBella has a lot of talent. You know, he gained a lot over at HBO when he put together the HBO Boxing After Dark and all that. But he never really carried it over to his own boxing promotions company. A lot of things that he did with Boxing After Dark, I've never seen him do in his actual productions to attract a younger fan base. I don't know what to think about that. And that's kind of all the potential. I mean, it's not for lack of fighters, because there's tons of guys. I mean, or Leases, or, you know, South Beach Gems or anything. I mean, there's a lot of talent from Kansas City all the way. But promoters actually promoting, getting out there, doing interviews, talking up the fight, talking up the events, selling their main events or the co-main events, even something as simple as, I think Bert Schroeder said it best before he passed away, rest in peace. He said he was watching a Vladimir Klitschko fight, and his foot fell asleep in the sixth round, and he fell asleep in the seventh round. The matchups just weren't there. They weren't, like you said earlier, they weren't creating matchups that were going to be exciting enough for people to tune into.
Right. It's interesting. Do you still talk to Freddie Roach?
Oh, no, I haven't talked to him in probably three years. After Manny and De La Hoya went at it, I was around when De La Hoya would come around trying to get Manny to come over to Golden Boy. And after he went to train De La Hoya down in Puerto Rico, Mac and Justin left, and the whole gym just kind of fell apart. The whole vibe, the whole energy was just gone. And then, like I said, Manfredo lost at Cal Zaghi. So I haven't actually talked to him in a few years now. And he moved out of that apartment. He got a condo over in West Hollywood, I believe.
I come from the same neck of the woods where he came up in the boxing game in Massachusetts, believe it or not. And the guy, we tried to get this guy on the show like 7 times. We even got one of his old sparring partners on one night. He was supposed to join in. But we never could get him on, but we used to always talk about him. And we called him Original Iron Mike, Mike Pusateri. And he literally trained Freddie Roach as a boxer. And was a
really?
Boxer in his day, Mike Pusateri. He called himself Iron Mike before obviously he might have been.
Yeah, Rich, I remember a couple times we were going to have him on, and we always, you know, make a phone call to him, and every time we'd get his voice, I'd be like, hey, this is Ian Mike Pusateri, not available, leave a message, and I'll call you back.
A
couple years ago, I was leaving work one day, and it was the weekend that somebody in the boxing world had passed away, and I think it might have been around the time Joe Frazier passed away. And I was I was leaving work, and I clicked on my phone, but on Facebook, you know, it's like, obviously, you know, kind of overshadowed by the passing of Joe Frazier, but the, you know, Massachusetts area, there has, like, Mike Pusateri, and I'm like, that's Iron Mike Pusateri. We could never say no, Rich. I said Iron Mike Pusateri, no longer with us, man.
Yeah.
Now, was he training with Freddie before Eddie Fudge?
Oh, he trained Freddie when Freddie was like years old. There's videos on YouTube. You can hear him. He's like narrating some of it. And Freddie's just a little kid hitting the bag, basically. He literally taught Freddie how to box in the first place, not just, you know, training him for props. Like, at his gym, Freddie would show up and learn the basics. This is how.
Okay.
Back. So.
Because the way Freddie would tell me the story, he was telling me how he started, his dad used to make him do road work about 6 years old. He'd get out there doing road work in Boston with his dad. And, he worked his way up through the amateurs and got into the pros and whatnot. But, I never heard him talk about, the only trainer he ever would discuss with us was Eddie Futch and how much Eddie meant to him, you know, how that got to him. And then also, how...
He must not even remember that far back. Except for the video. It's pretty cool. I'll email it to you when I find it, because I know I got him somewhere. Like, yeah. I used to hang out in Rockin a lot, where, of course, Rocky Marciano is famous, and Marvin Hagler spent some time there. We had actually one of the last great interviews with Petronelli. Why can't I think of his first name now? Tony Petronelli used to be my trainer, actually.
Okay.
But I used to hang out at the Petronelli gym up there, and we actually got a lot of people on the show through some of the stuff I used to do with the Rocky Marciano Foundation. I used to work with them, and I set up a website, Rocky49Wins.com, and learned a lot of history and unbelievable stuff in the area.
That's amazing. Those are just amazing experiences, aren't they?
Yeah. One thing people always say about boxing, you know, it's the camaraderie, the people they meet, and the history of it. And, even a guy like Mike Tyson can appreciate some of the legends. Like, some of the best stories that he tells is how Customato used to show them all the way watching these guys fight.
Promotions today. I mean, do you think promoters are doing everything they can to really keep the sport?
Well, it's tough because, you know, you come from where we grew up, Mike Tyson was the big thing. Don King was his promoter, and he had everything. But, you know, most people believe he was stuffing and doesn't promote as much as he used to. He's still out there promoting fights. So they don't care that he's a scumbag. And I think that's what sucks about boxing. These guys get, in MMA too, these guys get labeled as guys who don't know how to think. They don't know how to make good decisions. And he's just going to take the money. So these guys with money and power and brains take advantage of him. 9 times out of 10. And the fighter always gets screwed. And
right.
It happens so many times, whether it's a bad decision, corruption, whatever reason, the fighter gets screwed and the promoter still makes money. Manny Pacquiao, Timothy Bradley won. First, lead example there. I mean, look at that Bob Arum. He's smiling all the way to the bank. And, you know, it's a screwed up decision. And it affects both guys so much. You know, but they just let it happen. There's no dispute. The WBC actually had the whole fight reviewed, but was anything done about their decision? No. They said Pacquiao won the fight. Big deal.
Right.
So I think that's like the main thing that, you know, you can't get past as a fan when you're trying to, you know, stick with it and believe in boxing. And I come from a background. Don't worry about the warning. We have a little bit of overtime.
Okay.
But when I boxed myself, and, you know, there was no politics. It was just college boxing. And MMA really was not even really a concept. I mean, it was, but it wasn't on TV. People didn't really know about it. I think the only time I ever heard about MMA before I started boxing was...
So, what do you think about... Do you think it's mainly the promoters, just, you know, it's on the promoter thing, or do you think it's the matchmakers too?
Well, and he gave us a perspective about the belts that pissed him off, and the splinter, basically. And you hear Kennedy have too many divisions, too many... different rules, nothing standardized at all. You have so many different countries involved. It's almost too big for its own good. And there's just too many people with the hand in it that aren't in it for the right reasons. And that's why I said Mike Tyson impressed me. As much as people think he's a thug and a rapist and all the other bad things they say about this guy, if you really ever sit down and watch anything of his story and him telling it, you realize the guy is human and he loves the fighter, you know? That's why he goes to the MMA events, too. He's always backstage with fighters at the UFC events. He loves fighters and people who just love to go out and fight. You know, you can relate to those people because that's what he was. And he needs to really go out there and say, you know, I want to make sure you guys are treated well. But it's so dear to me if people say that. Even though they might mean it, they're not saying it. And I look at people like Manny Pacquiao, the way Bob Arum runs his life. And the guy can't even make sure he's got his taxes paid the way he's got his situation set up, you know?
Right.
A lot of boxers end up, you know, they have these great careers, but then they don't have anything in retirement. They've got nothing to show.
You know, one thing that's driving me nuts is this cold war between Top Rank and Golden Boy, the infighting in Golden Boy between Schaefer and De La Hoya right now.
And you know, the way they battle over fighters, fight cards, and personnel even. You know, they're swapping executives.
Right. Yeah. You know, the head of Golden Boy PR went over to Showtime, and that's how they managed to get Mayweather Jr. from HBO to Showtime and whatnot. And then, so that took away even further incentive for the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight, things of that nature. But you're right, that there is no uniformity in the sport right now, so we're not getting the best fights. We're not getting to unify, quote-unquote, titles or things of that nature because of all the obstacles that are being created. And you know, I know that there's a lot of TV revenue in it. I know HBO and Showtime both need boxing, you know, as a part of their monthly premium to keep charging customers and whatnot, and that's fine. But I just wish there was a way to kind of, you know, eliminate some of the obstacles to what would be the really good fights, the fights that would attract the mainstream, the general public. And not only that, but fill up these undercards with some really great, you know, fighters who are in their 6, 8, 10 rounders, ready for some, you know, possible world title work in the next few fights. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I really liked about this Boxino tournament. That's what I think that boxing needs to do more of, is stuff that's a little shorter rounds, more exciting, kind of get into it because it's a fast fight, you know, but the guy fights, you know, in a short time, you know, 2 weeks apart or whatever the tournament length is. And, you know, they have some really good people. The first couple of rounds they showed it at was very decent fights, I thought. Especially the last one.
Yeah.
A lot of knockouts. It was still a very entertaining fight. Both guys were going at it the whole time. So I just thought that was really an entertaining way to do it. And, you know, you look at MMA, the way Bellator does it with their tournament format, it seems to work. And over in the UK, the Prize Fighter tournament has been going on for years, and they've done a good job with it. But what impressed me the most about boxing is the way that the heavyweight died in America. We didn't have an American
heavyweight
anymore. And the welterweights became the show all of a sudden. And guys like Floyd Mayweather came out of the woodwork and made the welterweights the star because there were so many American welterweights coming out. And he was so good and undefeated and got all the belts. And people just started paying more attention to all the weights around welterweight. Because for me, growing up, it was always about Mike Tyson and the heavyweights. You never really cared about maybe Julio Cesar Chavez people would want to watch because he was on a Tyson undercard. But, I mean, you really didn't hear much about lightweights and welterweights. Marvin Hagler, maybe, and Sugar Ray Leonard. But, you know, the heavyweights were the big story all the time, and they got paid the big bucks. Everybody talks about how Tyson made $1 million a fight, and nobody wanted to fight him.
And back then, too, I mean, pretty much 9 out of 10 of the big heavyweights were under Don King as well. I mean, Don King pretty much ruled the heavyweight division in the time period you're talking about, right?
Right. I expect it right now. I feel like I'd rather watch an MMA fight. Boxing is not as intense for me anymore. There's two on in the same night, like tomorrow night when it's Friday night fights, get a good matchup, and Bellator's got something on. I'm going to be switching channels, and I'm probably going to watch more of the MMA. And I never done MMA. I've done boxing, so it kind of tears me apart that I can't watch boxing anymore sometimes, but I will every now and then watch a good fight, and I'll still hit the bag and think about boxing, but the more I think about getting back into the fight game, if I ever do, it would probably be in an amateur MMA match. Because it appeals to me more. I do still love boxing.
That's the predicament we're in, is that, I mean, worldwide, boxing still generates more revenue than MMA, but it's kind of like the whole MySpace Facebook dilemma of 2006. MySpace was 10 times bigger than Facebook, but because all the media all the reporters' kids were, you know, in Ivy League schools and their kids were on Facebook, everybody thought that Facebook was bigger. And boxing has to watch out for that, because if they don't get some more, not only good matches between good fighters, but if they're not out there selling those fighters every day, pushing them, promoting them, getting them going, like you said, UFC, Bellator, Strikeforce, I believe, the excitement can shift to the majority. And if you're a boxing fan, but you're switching back between an MMA and a boxing event, which, you know, nothing wrong with that at all. I'm going to fight them. But that's the thing, is that we don't have any young blood promoters out there, you know, selling the fight before the fight actually happens, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, and the same thing, like I said before, it doesn't matter who's out there and how I'm doing it, but it just seems to me like they're all the wrong reasons. Not only do you have enough local good people involved in the game, like who have had some fighting experience, that's a plus. Especially if it's world championship experience. Like when Golden Boy first came out, and, you know, Oscar was doing a conscious of being involved. But he just couldn't. It's a shame, but eventually those guys will have to fight whoever is in the way. You know, it's challenging for the belt. But it is, you know, boxing is getting to the point where it's so, you know, you're going to see every day of the week almost, there's going to be a fight world in boxing, but you can't say the same for MMA sometimes. It's not
right.
Big yet. And so what happens now is these MMA guys coming up are saying, why aren't we getting paid like the boxers? And it's just making boxing look better, and, you know, like they do take care of their fighters more. But those younger promoters,
right.
I mean, as soon as a younger promoter, like a somebody like Mike Tyson comes along, maybe not with his experience, but, you know, has had a little maybe Olympic experience or amateur experience. Even a guy like John Ruiz, former heavyweight champion, just got involved in New England with a company that's going to do MMA and boxing. Stuff like
okay.
that is exciting to me because it gets people into more of a perspective of thinking about the fighter first rather than my bottom line.
True. You know, I also have to say, one of the reasons I really like going up to Gleason's, Bruce Silvergray, the owner of Gleason's, I mean, he thoroughly supports the Metros, the you know, New York City Golden Gloves. And, I mean, he puts on a full show, with, you know, for the judges, for the refs, you know, for the athletic commission officials. When the Metros come through Gleason's, he's really trying to build up all the young fighters, trying to give them advice, trying to, you know, make connections, trying to get them involved with very various people to keep them after the Metros, after the Golden Gloves, to keep them in boxing, to turn, you know, either to head to the Olympics or to turn pro, to, you know, to try to get them into some of the local New York City fight promotions, you know, the Blue Bellas, Broadway, things of that nature. So there is in boxing probably more of a support system than in MMA, because, you know, I haven't really been to any MMA gyms, but I don't hear about them as often either. I know that, you know, there's a lot of boxing gyms that there are still, that there's not only support in, but there's mentors, there's people who have experience, there's managers walking through, there's scouts walking through, matchmakers walking through, trying to support it. But to translate that, to take that raw energy out of the gym and then put it in a context, like you said, where, you know, I mean, look at Cuz D'Amato. He was working with Tyson for years. He kept putting him on all the amateur circuits, the local fair circuit, kept sending out tapes to the local journalists and the A-Wide World of Sports for a couple of Saturday afternoon fights. And that kind of tipped into the mainstream a little bit. MMA does have the attention. It probably commands about 80-90% of the MMA that's going on, and especially women's vision that they put together and whatnot. Can reinvigorate that. Versus, you know, the other entertainment options.
fights that
so you don't
this weekend actually most of the best
that's another thing.
The other thing is the spotlight on the fighters, what they do outside the ring. Remember back in Muhammad Ali's day, you know, he went to Africa and he was with the people, and it was a big story wherever he went and whatever goodwill he was doing.
Right.
You don't see guys doing like that. And look at Floyd Mayweather. The best thing you see him do is maybe he's on Skype with some soldiers, or he's giving some sandwiches to some homeless people in Vegas. But he should be all over the world as an ambassador to the sport if you really want to grow it, like he says he does. And he's got all the time in the world to do it. He doesn't have to train 24/7. He seems to be able to keep himself on weight all the time. And he owes more to the sport, I think. Especially, you know, he seemed to come out of jail a little bit more humble. And I thought that was going to be lead to great things. But, you know, in the end, he's all about making more money and setting up the future for himself first.
Now, I think Mayweather's going to go the direction of who's the receiver from. Take the Terrell Owens and he said, you know, just happy next. Follow up his boxing career. So, you know, you're right. I mean, if he stayed in boxing, he'd be a great ambassador for it. He would get a lot of press, he'd get a lot of publicity, and you know, he could grow his Mayweather Promotions. But I think he's kind of letting Al Hammond take over Mayweather Promotions right now, much like De La Hoya did with his brother-in-law, Richard Schaefer. So I don't know how involved he'll be.
Silent Don King of the boxing industry. You hear nothing about him except for who he controls, you know. But it's interesting how much fighting belt there.
It is. It is, and honestly, I'm not sure if Al Hammond is good for boxing yet, or if he is just another Don King. And even if he was another Don King, would a new Don King work in this era of TV and publicity and things of that nature? I'm not sure.
Well, all right, Tony, we're kind of way into overtime here, but give us a little rundown about your books that are available and how people can find you online.
Absolutely. So I wrote 5 books in regards to 5 promotions. They basically kind of walk you through everything from start, what it takes to set up either a boxing or an MMA fight promotion. The first one's called Fight Town Millionaires, The First Secret. That one just handles the math, fight promotion in general. 500 seat local gym fight or 17,000 MGM Grand Garden Arena fight. It gives you the math from, you know, for everything in between that and, you know, what you can do to actually make a profit as a fight promoter. The Crown Jewel is the official fight promoter playbook. That's my second book, and that one really breaks politics, how to keep your fights the evening, choose things of that nature. The fighters make